Seekers, Mike Beloy here. Well, the Circle Jerk is in full force tonight down in Tampa. Oh, my goodness. Guess who got nominated by the Republican Party? Right, Mitt Romney. And they're all choking on it, too. Oh, my God, the Republicans hate this guy. But what are you going to do? You got to get the dark-skinned man out of the White House. I was watching a little bit of this on MSNBC. I don't know where these people live, these Republicans who are speaking. It's incredible. They can't believe the things they're saying. And what they're trying to do, obviously, is convince us, the great unwashed out here, that their policies of favoring the rich, destroying the middle class and the working class, turning us into serfs, so there is truly a 99% and a 1% forever, is somehow the right thing to do. Screw them. This hour is sponsored by Norman Goldman. Yes, that Norman Goldman. The Norman Goldman Show support. Here's his message. The Norman Goldman Show supports real independent voices speaking truth. That is why this hour is sponsored by the Norman Goldman Show. Norm's book, Journey to Justice, details his own voyage to the truth. Visit NormanGoldman.com, where justice is served. Thanks, Norm. Good guy. Norm Goldman is one of the good ones. Check out his program. NormanGoldman.com. I got this email right before the program began, and it's from one of our regular chat room guests. One of the people who's in there on a regular basis. He goes by the name Emotional Problems. which is about all of us. Anyway, Emotional Problems sent me this. Hi, Mr. Mike. I hate to interrupt your show prep and or your viewing of the wonderful Republican convention, but did you hear that the Obama administration is enacting new CAFE standards that require the U.S. automobile fleet to have an average of 55 miles per gallon by 2025? What can we do to stop this merciless tyranny? Cars that get better gas mileage? The horror! The horror! Is there no limit to the iron rule of this socialist, Marxist, communist in chief? Your friend, Emotional Problems. Yeah, I know, EP. That's you're right. I mean, we should have the right to get 6 miles to the gallon if we want to. Gasoline prices, of course, are off the chart again. Nobody talks about it this time. Here in the Atlanta area, it's right around $4 a gallon for a regular. For a regular. But no, you notice nobody's talking about it. Shh. I realize it would hurt poor people, like me. But $6, $7 a gallon for gas. What's it going to take? I mean, the rest of the world pays about that much. Do you know what they pay in Canada? You know what they pay in Puerto Rico? Do you know what they pay in? Never mind. It doesn't matter. This is the United States. We have a right to gouge, dig, pollute, pump, pipe, anything we want to pump, pipe, gouge, and pollute. You knew that scenario was phony. Do you remember? I almost called Bob Kincaid about this. Remember a couple of weeks ago, Mitt Romney went to a campaign event at Century Mine in Beallsville, Ohio, and hundreds of coal workers and their families were there. And the shot that I saw, he's standing up on stage, this rich son of a bitch who never worked a day in his life, standing there with these coal miners behind him. And some of them, you know, had coal streak faces, like they had just come off a shift. And, you know, and I saw that, I thought, WTF, come on, what's going on here? This is not right. What's going on? Well, now many of the mine's workers from the Century Mine in Beallsville, Ohio, are saying that they were forced to give up a day's worth of pay to attend the event, and they feared they might be fired if they didn't. That's according to local radio news at WWVA. I'm sure our friend Bob Kincaid is aware of the story. The claims have been mostly denied by the chief financial officer of Murray Energy Company, which owns the mine. That guy's name is Rob Moore. He acknowledges that workers weren't paid that day, but he says no one was made to attend the event. Well, kind of. According to Huffington Post, he's quoted as saying, well, he was on local news WWBA. He said, quote, our managers communicated to our workforce that the attendance at the Romney event was mandatory, but no one was forced to attend. What? It is mandatory, but you're not. You son of a bitch! I can't stand this. I want to get this guy and shove a miner's helmet right up his butt with the light on.
Oh, well, attendance was mandatory, but we didn't force anyone to attend.
Oh, my God. The interest in having all these employees stand there like a bunch of robots. And if you remember that scene, I remember the miners standing there with a look on their face that said, you know, if we could get away with this, we'd wring your goddamn neck, Romney. They were all standing right behind him, just kind of staring. You remember? You know what I'm talking about. Remember this? The company's interest in having these guys line up and pretend they're supporting Romney is a result of its CEO's close ties with Romney. In May, Romney teamed up with the CEO of Murray Energy, Bob Murray, for a fundraising event in West Virginia. And Murray made no secret of his support for the Republican Party. He previously backed Rick Perry, which will give you a general idea of this half-ass's IQ. He backed Rick Perry. Whew. Oh, in addition, his company has donated more than $900,000 to Republican candidates in the last 2 years, as according to the Center for Response in Politics. Murray is also a climate change denier, the guy that owns Murray Energy. Well, there's a surprise. And he's been an outspoken critic of Obama's stance on coal. And Obama's position on coal may be why Moore told station WWVA that having employees attend the Romney event, quote, was in the best interest of anyone that's related to the coal industry in this area or the entire country. I have a feeling that Mr. Murray is a punk. An absolute murderous punk. How many people have died in his mines, I wonder? You know, if we were a regular radio program with a nice big staff, like, oh, I don't know, let me think of somebody. Oh, I know Sean Hannity. I could probably tell you how many people have died in Murray coal mines. This isn't the first time, according to Huffington Post, that workers have been frustrated by a Mitt Romney campaign event. Employees of Sensata Technologies, a company owned by Romney's previous employer, Bain Capital, protested a campaign event earlier this month in Bettendorf, Iowa. In that case, Romney didn't respond to questions about what he would do to prevent their jobs being outsourced. What do you want to bet the next day half of them were fired and the other half said, guess what, your jobs are being outsourced? Yeah. I hate these people with a depth and breadth and width that is just unknowable. If you want to join in tonight, lines are open, 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. Now they're standing a rusty road, all empty, because the LNN don't stop here anymore.
is Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Regarding these crazy bastards who own the coal mines, as Bob Kincaid has pointed out, during the first 3 years of the Obama administration, employment in the coal industry actually went up. But oh no, they will lie about anything. Because we have a non-white person in the White House. No matter what it takes. This is the most racist country on the planet. Anthony is in Astoria, New York, listening online. Hello, Anthony. Hey, Anthony.
Can you hear me?
I hear you now. Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry about that. You know, that, to me, you know, the whole, you know, the Blair Mountain, they're trying to blow up Blair Mountain, weren't they? I mean, they're trying to strip mine that or mountaintop removal Blair Mountain. And, you know, it kind of says it all, doesn't it? Doesn't it say, it's not just the Republicans, it's, as you say, you know, Obama's increased coal production or made it, you know, part of his energy plan, right?
Yes, yes.
You know, and it just seems like, yeah, it's just another kick in the teeth to the working man. You know, here's this rich guy standing up there, and they have to give up a day's pay to a mandatory attendant that they had to, right? It was mandatory, correct?
That's according to the interview with the guy who owns the mine on WWVA. He said attendance was mandatory, but no one was forced to go. Tell me what that means.
If you have to go or you lose your job.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is it's the way Washington, you know, just the ruling class and all its components and lackeys and, you know, media, you know, servants, think of working people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, I mean, it's just, it seems like, you know, this is what they have in mind. You know, you do what we say, we'll pay you. Maybe not. Down the road, more mandatory days of work, perhaps.
Yeah.
Where you don't get paid. I know I'm not being very coherent, but, you know.
No, I get what you're saying. But anyone who is part of the Republican Party, or part of the support system of the Republican Party, has got to be at least mildly schizophrenic and certainly a liar. Because the reality that they live in and the reality they're trying to sell to the American people are two different things entirely.
One thing, you know, you touched for a second, I think, the other night. I was driving and half listening. I'm sorry. But, you know, the whole thing with Chris Matthews and Reince Priebus?
Right.
You know, he expected to get on that show with those people and just run his thing, and, you know, that would be done. That would be the end of it. I was relatively surprised myself that Chris Matthews went at him the way he did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, personally, I just have always kind of thought of Chris Matthews as a tool. You know, maybe I'm, you know.
Well, I always thought he was, you know, he's part of the media establishment in this country, and that means he doesn't piss off the wrong people. And the wrong people can include the chairman of the Republican National Committee. And I thought Chris Matthews going after that lying son of a bitch on MSNBC the other morning on Morning Joe. We played the sound on that last night. And I thought that Chris Matthews doing that almost redeemed him in my eyes as being a journalist rather than just another corporate shill who has a pretty secure position where he makes millions of dollars a year and he really doesn't give a damn. All he cares about is not mussing the wrong feathers. So
right.
I was glad to see him go after Reince Priebus.
Well, it's fantastic. But, you know, what's going to be the fallout for that of that for him?
Well, I think there may be. I watched a little bit of but the MSNBC coverage of the circle jerk going on down in Tampa. And Chris Matthews seems to be on the outs with most of the talking heads that were there to discuss this, except Al Sharpton. And I said, you know, don't be surprised if all of a sudden Chris Matthews winds up at, what's the TV channel that everybody winds up at?
Current
TV, yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised. Anthony, I got to move on. Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you.
All right, take care. Thanks for checking in. Appreciate your call. All right, more of your calls when we come back. Got a couple of emails here, too, that I want to share with you from Cap Mary and from who else we got here? From Diana in Florida. Just a bunch of folks. So stick around. We have one open line if you want to jump in here, 877-996-2556.
Watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, our last caller mentioned Blair Mountain and how, I don't know what coal company it is, I could ask Bob Kincaid, is trying to blow it up. If you don't know about Blair Mountain, the Battle of Blair Mountain, you should. This is prior to the formation of unionized coal miners. This goes back to the 20s. And there's some names involved in the Battle of Blair Mountain. There are about 100 Americans were killed by private army and federal troops. Mary Harris Jones, Mother Jones, was involved in trying to stop people from entering into this battle because she knew it was going to be a bloodbath. General Billy Mitchell, you know, hero of World War One. Ordered army bombers from Maryland to get involved in aerial surveillance. It's if you don't know about Blair Mountain, just go to Wikipedia. And you should know about this. You know, we were taught this in high school, and my son Chris, who went through high school in when Kathy in the 90s. Didn't have a clue. He never knew who John L. Lewis was. He didn't know about the Battle of Blair Mountain. He didn't know the Matawan Massacre. He knew nothing about it. And not because my son is stupid. He's not. He has two college degrees now. But because it wasn't taught to him. So if you don't do anything else the next day or two, please go to Wikipedia. Just type in Blair Mountain. And I'll type it into any search engine and then go to Wikipedia and read this, okay? You should know about this. You should know about this. I don't know. All right, hold on. Well, all right, Bill in Paso Robles, California is listening online. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, as I told Kathy, you know, my message is sort of gloom and doom.
oh, gee, that's unusual,
you know,
for this program.
I mean, you know, those are just words, but, you know, we got to start with, you know, I'm sort of taken off from where you closed last night with, you know, get used to saying President Romney and all that. And anyway, I just, I wanted to just, I guess, add to the gloom and doom, not that it's necessary because, you know, there's lots of, you know, there's a dozen different polls, and, you know, the television media, you know, seems to, you know, to like the polls that make it more of a horse race and make it more desperate for both sides, of course.
Sure.
You know, what I told, you know, I won't mention his name. He's a, you know, he's a famous talk show, great fella. He's a good friend of yours. And last night he said, if Romney pretty much sweeps everything, you know, all three, although the Senate is doubtful, the Senate probably won't go, but it could. And, you know, Mr. T.H., he said, if the Republicans sweep the place, and he used the phrase, we're doomed. I've never heard him say that.
You're talking about Hartman.
Yeah,
that's okay. That's okay. Okay. He's right. I mean, Tom Hartman and I are not in disagreement about that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and what I think what, you know, my position is that it doesn't make any difference how you try to educate the American public. The national news media, television, radio, the talk shows, some of the major newspapers, they insist on keeping America stupid and ignorant of what constitutes your own best interest. As a result of that, you know, I look at the lies that Romney has put out there during this campaign. First against Newt Gingrich, not that I support Newt Gingrich for anything other than to go home and get fatter. But all the lies that Romney and his billionaire backers put out there, and the lies that are, look, they're not even making an attempt to be honest where it concerns this campaign. The Republicans are not. A lot of people say, well, the Romney campaign, you hear national media figures, well, the Romney campaign, they're doing gutter politics too. No, they're not. They're telling the goddamn truth. Excuse my language, but this gets me furious. This is where the national media plays that, oh, well, we're right in the middle here. I've never seen so many puff pieces on Mitt Romney. New York Times this morning, three of them, three puff pieces about Romney and his old lady. And then I see this thing on, you know, all this stuff on television news. I thought Diane Sawyer was about to perform oral sex on somebody in the Republican Party watching her fawn all over these people tonight on her program is enough to turn your stomach. So that's why I'm saying get used to the term President Romney. It's because...
Yeah, okay, Mike, I just wanted to throw in one more thing.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, it's right along with what you're saying. First of all, you know, the influence of television is, you know, in fact, you know, I even wrote it down here. I mean, it's basically unbeatable. You know, with enough money pumped into TV, you know, you can tell, you know, you can lie your way into anything. And people who say, well, how about the, you know, the California governor's race against, you know, Jerry Brown against Meg Whitman, you know, she spent $1 trillion and, you know, old Jerry still beat her. Well, that's because Jerry Brown was known by California. It was like his backyard.
Well, not only that,
and he probably still would have beat her.
Not only that, but he had been governor once and his father had been governor. So, yeah, everybody out there knew him. Yeah.
And so my conclusion is, if enough money is pumped in, and Tom, you know, Tom is the, you know, he's the one that taught me these, you know, these phrases. I mean, there is, you know, there's literally no defense against, you know, billions of that, millions
That's
of
true.
Billions pumped into television because, you know, Americans, you know, I've been to Europe three times and, you know, Americans compared to Europeans, and you know, you've said it a million times, are just so sadly. Stupid.
That's the truth. And Bill, let me move on. I appreciate what you had to say. It all makes sense. And Hartman's right. I mean, Tom Hartman is right. I have more extreme positions than he does, but on this one, we're in total agreement. By the way, this hour is being sponsored by Norman Goldman. And his message, Norman Goldman Show supports real independent voices speaking truth. That's why this hour is sponsored by the Norman Goldman Show. Norm's book, Journey to Justice, details his own voyage to the truth. Visit normangoldman.com, where justice is served. He's a good guy, Norman. Thanks, Norman. Appreciate your sponsorship. That can wait. Let me get to this. We'll come back to your phone calls in just a second here. From Captain Mary in Memphis, she says, perhaps you've covered this. My computer crapped out last night and I couldn't listen. Here's what she wrote. Despite what we both know about industrial processing of nameless meats, my mister won't quit eating hot dogs. He likes them. He likes them with mustard, with beans, with sauerkraut, with chili. There's a lot you can do with the hot dog, and some of it's even legal. But I digress. In November, California will vote on Prop 37, which will require labeling of all crops and products that contain genetically modified organisms, you know, GMOs. Monsanto alone has already dumped over $4.2 million into attack ads. DuPont has contributed millions, and the Washington, D.C.-based Grocery Manufacturers Association and a number of its members have also chipped in. The interesting thing is that some of those members are trying to tap into the organic market and have either developed or bought natural or organic brands. But how long will those brands stay organic when the parent company opposes labeling GMOs? A few of the members who have directly donated to defeat Prop 37 are listed right here with one of the brands that they own. PepsiCo owns Tropicana Organic. Coca-Cola owns Odwalla. ConAgra owns Orville Redenbacher's Organic Popcorn. Kellogg's owns Kashi Organics. J.M. Smucker owns Tenderleaf Tea. Hormel Foods owns Natural Choice. General Mills owns Gold Medal Organic. Bimbo Bakeries, what a name, owns Earth Grains. Bimbo Bakeries also donated through its Sara Lee subsidiary. These are companies, now listen up, these are companies who have contributed tons of money to defeat Prop 37 in California that would label GMO food as being GMO food. There's more. Del Monte, which owns Fruit Naturals. Hershey, which owns Dagoba. The hell is that? Cargill, which owns Organic Cow of Vermont. Campbell Soup Company, which owns V8 Organic. And McCormick, which owns McCormick Organic Spices. Meanwhile, the list of problems caused by GMO diet keeps growing. Obesity, diabetes, pancreatitis, lupus, cancer, low sperm count, in utero fetal death, birth defects, infertility in later generations, allergies, respiratory problems, cardiovascular problems, hair growth in the mouth. All right, that one was in hamsters. Toxic production in the GI tract, dysfunction and failure of liver and kidneys, stroke, brain damage, attention deficit disorder, lowered IQ, unpredictable gene activation or inactivation, stroke, permanent DNA mutation, and death. And I probably left a few things out, too. More from Captain Mary when we come back. Dear God! Bad to the bone.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malone.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Norm Goldman. His message, the Norm Goldman Show, supports real independent voices speaking truth. That's why this hour is sponsored by the Norm Goldman Show. Norm's book, Journey to Justice, details his own voyage to the truth. Visit normangoldman.com, where justice is served. Thank you, Norman. I appreciate your sponsorship. As a matter of fact, he's sponsoring the entire night. Back to Captain Mary. What she's talking about are the millions of dollars pumped into California to defeat Proposition 37, which would require labeling of all crops and products that contain genetically modified organisms. And she listed a few of the companies that have contributed directly to defeat Prop 37. PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, ConAgra, Kellogg's, J.M. Smucker, Hormel, General Mills, Bimbo Bakery, Sara Lee, Del Monte, Hershey, Cargill, Campbell Soup Company, and McCormick. And then her list of problems caused by a GMO diet keep growing. I can't go through that list again. Dear God. But she concludes by saying, and meanwhile, the FDA and USDA and their Monsanto toadies, Michael Taylor and Tom Vilsack, are knowingly, deliberately deregulating GMOs and knowingly, deliberately approving GMOs in our food supply. It's worth noting that Bill Gates, who has spoken publicly in favor of culling the population, has 500,000 shares of Monsanto. According to polls, approximately 93% of Americans want GMOs labeled, and a majority of us want them banned. Personally, I want them banned, and I want Monsanto and its co-criminals prosecuted for terrorism. Is it time to invest in guillotine stock? Signed, Cap Mary in Memphis, who doesn't eat hot dogs. Whew. Prop 37. Type that into your search engine and see what you come up with. All right? Where are we? Robert is in Santa Fe listening to KTRC. Hey, Robert.
Hey, good evening, Mike, and greetings from the High Lonesome. I just wanted to say that every day I get up, I hear all this political noise. I'm reminded of my favorite quote from the 1950s.
Yeah?
I'm pretty sure you know the source of this quote, but the quote is, you ready?
Yeah.
Barbarism parading as American virtue.
From the 50s?
1950s, yeah.
Barbarism. I've heard that. Gore Vidal.
That's from Dalton Trumbo.
Dalton Trumbo. Right. The blacklisted director.
That's right. But screenwriter.
Screenwriter,
yeah. And it's just amazing to me how true that quote is. These days, especially.
Oh, my God, yes. Well, you know, the forces of fascism had their day in the 50s and right up to the demise of Joe McCarthy. And then they kind of disappeared after Barry Goldwater had his ass handed to him. And what they did, what the fascists did simply was go underground and build think tanks, universities, radio programs, television programs, the ability to blast out articles on any topic that advanced the fascist agenda. Meantime, normal people just went about their business. Liberals and progressives figured, hey, you know, we can ride on FDR's New Deal and Lyndon Johnson's policies, and we can just ride on this. We don't have to worry about the fascists. Well, the fascists were busy at work, and what's going on in Tampa tonight is kind of the culmination of all this work that's been going on, as you point out, since the 50s. And there it is, 60 years of work, and it's sitting there tonight in Tampa.
And they're back.
Boy, are they ever. All right. Thanks, Robert.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. Keep up the good work. Keep that fire raging.
I'll try. Thanks, Robert. And I appreciate the Dalton Trumbo quote, too. I had just completely had slipped my mind. Speaking of Dalton Trumbo, this has nothing to do with Dalton Trumbo, but if you want to see a movie that came out in the 70s, I think, that will give you an idea of how media and the reason how media has been totally corporatized. And the reason Dalton Trumbo brings it up is because the film was written and directed by Haskell Wexler. And those two, the director, Haskell Wexler, the screenwriter, Dalton Trumbo, I'm drawing a blank now on why they're linked in my mind. But the movie is Medium Cool. It came out in 69. If you've never seen Medium Cool, what they're talking about is television. It's a cool medium. So Medium Cool. Movies are hot medium. television is a cool medium, and there's a scientific explanation as to why one is called hot, the other is called cool. But you ought to see the movie. It is it almost looks like a documentary. It isn't. It's about the riots in Chicago. That's part of the focus of the movie. It's not about the riots, but it takes place during the Democratic National Convention. A lot of the filming was done in 68. The movie came out in 69. And you should see this. Medium cool. I strongly, strongly recommend it. All right, we have a break coming here. When we come back, your phone calls, stay on hold. Brian in Everett, Washington, Joe in Los Angeles, I'll get to you when we come back. And we do have one open line here. So if you want to join in, 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. This hour is being sponsored by Norman Goldman. My man, his message. The Norman Goldman Show supports real independent voices speaking truth. That's why this hour is sponsored by the Norman Goldman Show. Norm's book, Journey to Justice, details his own voyage to the truth. Visit normangoldman.com where justice is served. Thanks, Norm. It is very much appreciated. Brian is in Everett, Washington, listening online. Hi, Brian.
Yeah, well, how's it going? My observation about the kind of the way the political battle between the Democrats and Republicans seems to be set up along these lines, and as it's been staged now with this hurricane almost approaching Florida, then being diverted over to Louisiana. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have Tampa. And there are people who are, I mean, I wouldn't say they're holy, but they're glorious. I mean, this is what it is. This is what keeps the bad weather off of them. And people will speculate about technology or something that moves hurricanes, I don't know, or whatever, but it's actually, this is my theory, that inside that auditorium or inside that arena, I don't even want to look at it. And the reason I don't is because I know I'm such a sinner. And to gaze upon the stage and to gaze upon those people would be like, the Nazis and Raiders of the Lost Ark opening the Ark of the Covenant, and their faces melted off because of the holiness. So I don't want to look, and I think it's actually a protective thing that the police guard the arena. And so that's what keeps the hurricanes off, is the holiness and the glory. And see, and so those people inside that arena have all that protection and wealth, and it's actually it is a religious thing. And so anyone who's not in there, they'll get, the hurricane slop and the poison would just get, just get settled back into that same old alley up the Delta, just like it's been going, up in New Orleans again. Kind of like it comes to me in certain ways, not physically, but, certain media and stuff, But, you just have to know your place. I mean, you can't.
Wait, Brian.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm being a little bit facetious, maybe.
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want to make sure I understand you.
Yeah.
So what keeps the hurricane kept it away from Tampa?
The glory. The glory is the glory of the, well, I don't know. Well, I mean, it had to be.
How about wind currents? What
yeah,
about high
that's
pressure?
True.
How about high pressure systems?
Well, the comment I was making is that see, there was a little video on Raw Story where a lady said her and her church they prayed
yeah.
that it would. I mean, because I saw a picture of church and they were raising their arms.
And so we're going to keep.
And you pray for God's help. You know, actually, praying for God's help. There is a spiritual dimension to life, and there is metaphysics, and there are focused intentions, and you can use certain names, Jesus or whatever name you might want to use, to focus your intention to direct your intent, and hopefully it's positive. You know, when you do that. But if you're praying for protection, don't send it all off onto the poor people again. Send all the hurricane slop back onto the poor people in New Orleans that have been getting all the hurricane slop. Yeah, I can imagine them having to drink an 8-ounce glass of the stuff that, dipped into the Gulf of Mexico every day. You know, whatever. Well, we don't get that here at the arena in Tampa because, things can be fixed, for everyone. You don't have to have your thing in Tampa and just throw the crap on everybody else. That's just my thing.
All right. Well, that's good. I hear what you're saying, Brian, and I appreciate your comments. Thanks, Brian. I think the point Brian was making, of course, was that the good Christians pray that somebody else will experience the pain and the suffering. But that's what good Christians do, at least these Christians. Speaking of the hurricane and the path of hurricane, Limbaugh had his typical, Limbaugh's going nuts. I think he's dead. I think Limbaugh's dead. And you know how, remember when you were in high school class, a biology class, and you had a dead frog, and you could hook an electrode up to its little bitty spinal column, or its little bitty brain, and you send a current through that, and the frog would jump, remember that? We used to do that a lot because, we were little sexist pig 16-year-old boys, and it used to scare the girls. And the hope was they would jump toward you, the girls, so you could comfort them. I think Limbaugh died probably about 6 months ago, drug overdose or too many pork chops or something. And he's animated with a wire up his ass, and he sits in that studio. And who's his producer? Hogface or something? Snurdly? Is that what? And they keep pulling the circuit breaker. And every time they close it, well, his latest, he said, they pulled the circuit breaker. He said that it was Barack Obama, the Obama administration, had tampered with the forecast of the storm in order to hurt Republicans. According to the pig man, he said, with none of this am I alleging conspiracy. Sure sounded like it, but he got Obama got the Weather Service to target Tampa, say that the hurricane was going to hit Tampa, so the Republicans would either cancel or postpone this glorious fascist circle jerk that's going on down there. Limbaugh said he grew suspicious because he noticed that the forecast for Tropical Storm Isaac had shifted dramatically away from Florida right after the Republicans canceled the first day of the convention. He said, what could be better for the Democrats than the Republicans to cancel a day of this? I'm alleging no conspiracy. I'm just telling you, folks, when you put this all together in this timeline, I'm telling you, it's unbelievable. This man is just goddamn crazy. Now, there are rumors. I don't know. I can't substantiate the rumors. There are rumors that Limbaugh's current wife was a prominent drug courier. And she got busted, and Limbaugh, because of his connections to the power establishment in this country, he got her put in his custody so he could have an unimpeded flow of drugs. That's right. I don't know. I don't know if there's any truth to that at all. I have no idea. I'm not alleging conspiracy here. I'm not saying that anything is going on, but the rumors are out there that Limbaugh's new old lady was a drug courier. I mean, big time. Big time. Oxy, bumbleheads, and all that stuff. You know, all those drugs that Limbaugh loves. I mean, I don't know. I'm not alleging a conspiracy here, but that's what I've heard. That his old lady was a prominent drug courier, and she got put in his custody so he could have an unimpeded flow of drugs. I mean, you take it for what it's worth. I don't know. I'm not saying it's this or that. I'm just saying it's whatever it is. Sandra Fluke had got that. Barack Obama slept with goddamn Susan. Rob Sidney with my granny and goddamn swearing. Wow. Circuit breaker, huh, Rush? Okay, we have a break. We have a break here. Oh, no, there's Ann Romney. Quick, everybody, switch off this program and switch over to your electric TVs. Quick, quick, there she is. Holy God in heaven. There's Ann Romney. Woo! What a babe. We'll be right back. About Ann Romney. Isn't she so pretty and so blonde and so white, the way a first lady's supposed to look? look at that. Ah! Ah! Oh my God. Who said that? Ah. All right. Well, wait a second. Let me get to Joe, who's in Los Angeles listening online. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
Thanks for Mike on the whole. I'd rather be listening to you, chatting with Kathy, chatting with folks in the chat room, than sitting with my eyes glued to the TV set watching a lobotomized version of Hee Haw.
Really? Really? Isn't this? I mean, I've never seen anything like this.
Mike, why did you have to bring up that stuff about Rush? Especially from somebody like me who was from Pittsburgh and remembers when Rush was a third-rate jockey by the name of Jeff Christie.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. And then there were those rumors, but we're, like we said, like you said, Mike, we ain't gonna go there.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Hey, Mike, how about a little bit of history lesson to remind some people about, you know, like what's happening with the poor miners, where they're told that they'll show up at the Our Money rally or else? You know, back in Pennsylvania, before 1934, if you wanted to cast a ballot, for example, you had to go in the poll room and you had a slip that you had to pull, a tinted slip. Blue was Republican, pink was Democrat, yellow was Socialist. And you had to pull the slip and then you had to sign the register and you gave it to one of the clerks and they put the number on it. You had to put that slip in a glass jar and they recorded what color slip you put in. And if you worked for an employer who didn't want you to vote for a certain party, or you had to pull a certain color ballot, and you didn't do that, you were fired the next couple of days.
Wow.
That's how it was in Pennsylvania before a secret ballot was enacted in 1934.
Mm-hmm.
I know that because, see, my grandfather was involved in the labor movement. And my grandmother was also involved in organizing the steel workers. And you wouldn't have had the steel workers if there wasn't a strong union called the United Mine Workers who actually sacrificed and gave money so that people could actually get through organizing drives where they were losing their jobs and starving. And, you know, Paul Ryan's talking about how he wants to privatize Social Security and all that stuff. It's a shame my grandma isn't alive. Grandma would give him a tongue-lashing. She remembers what the poor farms and the poor houses were before Social Security was passed.
Mm-hmm.
People were shamed to go there. They were humiliated. They were forced to work. No matter how old you were, Mike, you had to do your chores in the poorhouse. If you didn't, you weren't fed. My grandmother snuck food into the poorhouses and fed some of the people who were like 90 years old, sick with arthritis, weren't able to work. She thought that was a Christian thing to do until she got caught and was banned from the poorhouse. That's the way things were before Social Security. That's what Paul Ryan wants to bring back.
Yes, they do. And so does Mitt Romney, for that matter.
Our Money, yes, and his wife, Ayn Rand. Mom, oh, no, I better not go there, Mike.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But, Mike, I thought I would just educate a couple people of what the ways were before, and I just appreciate you and Kathy and letting us speak here and really enjoy that you got it lit every night. Thanks so much, Mike.
Well, thank you, Joe. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. I wanted to get to the... No, we don't have time. We have a break coming now. All right, when we come back, there's a couple of emails that I do want to share with you. And Floyd in Gulfport, Mississippi, I know you've been holding on for 27 minutes. If you can wait just a little bit longer, we'll get to you, too. It is so much fun watching the... during the commercial breaks here, I'm watching the what's going on at this convention in Tampa. It's just I don't know. I don't know if they're yelling Sieg Heil. I see a lot of arms raised. I see Ann Romney still up there. Great hairdo, nice square jaw, beautifully done makeup. She really looks good. Doesn't she look good? Holy Toledo, she looks good. She looks like a first lady. She looks like a first lady should look. She really, really does. She talk about moms and dads and... Hey, Ann, why don't you... Oh, never mind. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Old girl used to sue all my favorite ass.
entering a flying monkey free zone. It's Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Norman Goldman. He's sponsoring the whole night. Norman's message. The Norman Goldman Show supports real independent voices speaking truth. That's why this hour is sponsored by the Norman Goldman Show. Norm's book, Journey to Justice, detail his own voyage to the truth. Visit normangoldman.com, where justice is served. Thanks, Norm. All right. I know you're on hold. I'll be there in a minute. From Diane in Florida. Last night we were talking about these freaks down in Fort Stewart. I think it's Fort Stewart near Ludwigse, Georgia. Actually, it's closer to Hinesville, Georgia. Four active duty soldiers, I think all four active duty, busted. They had murdered, they're charged with murder, of one of their colleagues who was out of the service and his girlfriend, because the colleague, the killers thought, was going to blow open their terrorist plan to blow stuff up, kill the president, kill other soldiers, blow up dams, you know, the typical crazed white people insanity. Domestic terrorists real domestic terrorists are always white. Anytime you hear about five more black guys being busted because they're going to blow up the Sears building in Chicago because a bunch of FBI people said, hey, we'll give you some boots. How about new boots? All you have to do is blow up the Sears Tower. You know, don't believe it. Okay? You know, the black guys are going, is this for real? Yeah, it's for real. He's offering his boots. All we have to do is blow up a building, according to this freak. Okay, well, let's get the boots and not blow up the building. That's a good idea. Yeah, we'll take the boots. Bang! They're arrested. But the white killers are for real. Two words, Timothy McVeigh. So that's what I was talking about Monday. Diana wrote this. Hi, Mike. I was listening to you last night, Monday's podcast. I find all this talk of armed rebellion scary, though probably not for the reasons most people do. I have to be careful here how I express the following, for reasons that would become obvious. So I'll ask you to do a little reading between the lines, because I have to leave things out. I'm retired now, but in the 60s, during the Vietnam War and all the domestic civil unrest in the United States, I worked as a draftsman illustrator for a major technical publication house in the San Francisco Bay Area. We prepared camera-ready art and provided printing services for many of the major military, aerospace, research, and technology companies in the Bay Area. You would recognize many of their names. Because some of what we worked on was classified, I had a secret clearance. So for that reason, and speaking as vaguely as possible, three-dot ellipsis, anyone who thinks a domestic civilian group, even a supposedly militarized one, can take on the U.S. government in combat is a goddamn fool. A totally moronic, delusional fool, over and above being a traitor and an SOB. I can assure you, from the reports we printed regarding plans for dealing with civil unrest, that the government had, and presumably still has, contingency plans for everything. And I mean absolutely, positively, everything. Down to the most minute details, including, for example, exactly where certain streets in various cities would be barricaded. I know because I drew the maps. So extrapolate that degree of planning. While I totally believe in nonviolence, I must admit part of me is comforted by knowing that if these freaks start anything, they will be snuffed out like gnats on my windshield. Except for this. Remember what I said about my fearing what you probably do not? My fear comes not from the kooks who want to replay the Civil War with their pop guns and camouflage. It's from a fanatic, Christianized military that may side with them. Diane in Florida. Well, let me just add that, that's the goal of these skinhead groups and racist groups that exist and have metastasized inside the military. I can understand Diane's fear. I would hope that it is nothing more than a fear, hers and mine and anybody else's, that there are enough crazy killer types in the military who would side with the skinheads and the halfwits out here in the civilian world. Because even if they did, I think there are enough people in the military who would not take the side of these insurrectionist halfwits that the result would be, pretty bloody indeed. A new civil war, call it what you want. But I appreciate what Diana had to write about. And yeah, I think anyone listening to it can do what you suggested and read between the lines. Thanks, Diana. Floyd is in Gulfport, Mississippi. Hey, Floyd.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
Doing fine. Thanks for holding on. Sorry it took so long.
Oh, man, that's fine. We were talking several months back, and I meant to ask you before you got off the phone. You said back during Hurricane Camille you were on the Gulf Coast, I believe.
When?
Back during Hurricane Camille in 1969.
Oh, in 69, I lived in Tampa at the time, and when it slammed into Gulfport and that whole Mississippi area, yeah, I had some friends who were in the construction business in Tampa, and they put together one of those big camper buses. What are they called? The big Winnebagos. And also a huge, not a semi, but just whatever's just under a semi. And we went up there with plywood and tons of roofing nails and shingles and a lot of 3-inch rubber foam. And all kinds of stuff. And the idea was to go up there and help these folks. And I stayed for about 3 days, and I had to get back to Tampa. And my friends stayed on for, I don't know, God, it turned out to be a couple of months. So, yeah, I saw what happened along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. It was pretty horrendous. And this is back, you know, before anybody knew what the hell to do about these hurricanes. We didn't have that much notice anyway.
Yeah, I was working at a local radio station there, and we were basically the first to be back on with power, so we could communicate with everyone. And we had a lot of people bringing in water, and I mean, people really, you know, got into it. People, even the government, you know, there was no bickering about, you know, whether we're going to have a party or we're going to take care of the hurricane people.
Right.
I mean, but, you know, we brought up this subject that night about how there used to be equal time where you could rebut anybody's information politically, you know, and when that was done away with, I think that has been the most destructive thing.
Yeah, that was Reagan. That was Reagan, Reagan administration that destroyed the equal time requirement. Where it concerned political broadcasting, yeah.
And, you know, and also with Florida passing that Supreme Court ruling that it's not news, it's entertainment, so you can distort and lie on Fox all you want.
Right.
You know, those things with corporate people coming into political power is going to be a very tough fight, but people have got to wake up.
Mm.
I'm telling you.
Well, the right wing, again, going back to the defeat of Barry Goldwater, one of the goals was to get rid of the fairness doctrine in broadcasting, because while most normal Americans went about their business, these Republican fascists went about the business of setting up an infrastructure that was pretty much invisible to everybody, unless you were part of the infrastructure, whether it was putting professors into positions within universities, setting up their own universities, setting up just a massive web of organization that would make the Nazis jealous. And the culmination of that was the election of Ronald Reagan. That gave them the chance to start moving forward with the next stages of the agenda, which was one of the first things was to get rid of the Fairness Doctrine. Because they knew if they could get rid of the Fairness Doctrine, which came about right about the time that Limbaugh went on the air. You call it coincidence if you want to, but the Fairness Doctrine was deep sixed, and all of a sudden there was no need to rebut, or there's no legal requirement to allow anyone to rebut the lies and the propaganda that was put out by the right wingers. So, yeah, you're very right. It was the end of the Fairness Doctrine that started this 30-year slide into the abyss that we're in right now.
That's why we have this insanity with these people thinking like they do, because they're pretty much programmed how to think.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Well, you know, early on, in when Limbaugh started to go national and Roger Ailes was developing the Limbaugh monster, Limbaugh used to say on the air to his brain-dead audience, you don't have to think, you don't have to read the newspapers, you don't have to do anything, I'll do it for you. And it was not meant as a joke. And millions of people took him up on it. And that's one of the reasons that we are where we are. Floyd, I got to leave there. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in.
Here we go now. Keep it lowbrow. Get stupid. Because I know how. Check my brain in. Be an idiot. Act lame. Stay ignorant. Be remedial. Wear the dust cap. Slouch open. Cool like a hunchback. Don't discuss things. Shout the last word. Put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ. That's what I do. My advice. Girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rock the scientists, try and blind this. Keep the customers coming around.
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Norman Goldman.
Norman!
His message. The Norman Goldman Show supports real independent voices speaking truth. That's why this hour is sponsored by the Norman Goldman Show. Norm's book, Journey to Justice, details his own voyage to the truth. Visit normangoldman.com, where justice is served. Thank you, Norman. He's sponsoring the next hour, too. And we appreciate it very, very much. Gary is in Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Gary.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Not too bad. Before I get to my point, I just wanted to tell you that Mike Papantonio did say that I was responsible for those ads that were on the other week.
Okay.
And I also got the one from Norman Goldman, so what I'm wondering is, when do I get the dog with the radio in it, like the kids that sell seeds in the back of the comic book?
It's coming in the mail. Check your mail.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
Now, what I wanted to tell you is, the first thing was, I knew somebody that was actually in Medium Cool.
Really?
Yeah, do you remember the band scene?
In the scenes where the reporter quits and goes to the Chicago Democratic Convention and the band is playing, I think they were playing outside. Is that what you're talking about? That scene?
I think they were playing in a theater. They're a local band called The Litter from Minneapolis. They're a 60s band.
Oh, no, I know nothing about them. But you were in the band?
No, I know this guy that actually was in the band, and after the movie came out, he quit. And what happened was you see the band playing, but they overdubbed Frank Zappa over it.
I think I do remember this. I think so, I do.
Yep. So if you see it again, or anybody sees it, that's
well,
thing you should look for.
To me, it was one of the best movies ever made, and Haskell Wexler is one of the best cinematographers, if not the best cinematographer. I think he's dead, but it's been recent, you know, in the past 5 or 6 years. But what a genius with cinematography he really was.
I saw it ages ago on A&E when they used to show good movies on there, so
yeah.
I can remember it.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to tell you was, I don't know if you've heard this, but right around the Sandra Fluke time, I was listening to Stephanie Miller's show, and she played a clip from Rush Limbaugh where Rush Limbaugh actually says that Stephanie Miller looks hot sometimes. and of course, Stephanie being Stephanie, she doctored it to say Stephanie Miller is a slut.
Yeah, I love Stephanie. She pretty much cracks me up. I don't agree with all of her politics, but she damn sure doesn't agree with all of mine. But I love Stephanie. I've never had a bad time with her.
But I just wanted to share that with you, so the next time, if you come up to the Blue State Ball and she's here, you have something to mention while you're dancing.
I'll do it. Thanks, Gary.
No problem.
Take care. God, Stephanie and I dancing at the Blue State Ball 2 years. Was it 2 years ago or was it three? It just burned into people's memories. I guess we were just having too good a time. What, Kathy? Philip is in San Diego listening online. Hello, Philip.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Well, some good news coming out of California today that's making me really happy. There was a bill in the Senate that passed, and in the California Assembly today, they passed it 52-21. It's a bill that's going to protect lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth from dangerous and abusive treatments by mental health practitioners. In other words, it protects these kids from parents that want to send them to these so-called doctors and mental health professionals.
Right.
That want to fix them from being gay.
Now, what was this? It was a bill passed by the California legislature?
Yeah, the Senate passed it already. It just passed today in the state assembly. It's got to go back to concur with the amendments made in the assembly back to the Senate, and then it'll go to Jerry Brown's desk.
Well, I'm surprised that the Republicans didn't use some procedural move to block it. I'm surprised it passed.
I am too, but I'm happy about it. And
sure.
It's something, you know, that we don't really talk about too much with the kids. And that's why, you know, I can't turn on that fascist fest and watch any of it. It just turns my stomach. I think about the 2,000 people that were sitting there last night with Michelle Bachmann talking, doing things for him.
Yeah.
You know, whoever the hell him is, the cloud person or whatever, and stuff like that. And think about their kids and think about what happens to these kids that are throwaway kids.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are kids that, you know, they create more mental health problems for them. Suicide is big with them. A lot of them are throwaway kids. They're out here on the street in San Diego.
Sure.
And to survive, they do drugs, they prostitute, you know. And this is how we take care of the children, you know.
Yeah, this is the United States of America. We don't, the political structure in this country doesn't give a goddamn about children unless they're fetuses. If they're fetuses or blastocytes or whatever the hell they're called, little clumps of cells, then these Republicans will bend over backwards and do whatever contortions they have to do to pretend like they're interested. But this is the United States, Philip, and you know this as well as I do. Kids, whether they're gay, straight, transgender, doesn't make any difference. But especially if they happen to be gay kids, they're treated the way the Bible tells these Republicans and a lot of Democrats to treat them, and that is to ignore them, to hurt them, to try to get them deprogrammed. It's awful. And, you know, I've said it a million times. I just hope that these phony-ass, belligerent, murderous, fake Christians would just once, listen to the three or four, well, they can't listen, but read the three or four sermons that their Lord and Savior ever gave, and how he talked about the rich are condemned, and how you treat these among you, the least among you, is the way you treated me. And if you didn't do it right, your ass is going to burn in the hell you created. I'm telling you, hell is going to be just a huge writhing mass of Republican, naked, degenerate, right-wing, caucasoid freaks burning and stenching up the entire universe. How's that for an illusion? Philip, I got to leave it there. Thank you, sir. We'll be back after the break. We have a real barn burner, the third hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This hour also is being sponsored by Norman Goldman. Thank you, Norman. He got the whole night tonight, didn't he? His message, same as it was. What's that line? Same as it always was. Same as it ever was. From the, is that Talking Heads? Same as it always was. Here's his message. The Norman Goldman Show supports real independent voices speaking truth. That is why this hour is sponsored by the Norman Goldman Show. Norm's book, Journey to Justice, details his own voyage to the truth. Visit normangoldman.com, where justice is served. Thanks, Norman. It's very kind. This is not good news at all. An Israeli court or an Israeli judge today ruled that the state of Israel bore no responsibility for the death of Rachel Corrie all those years ago. Do you remember? If you don't, or if you don't know what I'm talking about, do a Google search on her name, Rachel Corrie, C-O-R-R-I-E. She was a peace activist from the United States. You should know this. Anyway, she was run over by a military bulldozer 9 years ago as she was protesting the Israeli government's demolition of houses in the Gaza Strip, Palestinian houses. The verdict, all these years later, was finally read. This was a civil case. It was read in a courtroom today in Israel, in Haifa. And the courtroom, according to reports, was packed with supporters of Mrs. Corrie's Ms. Corrie's family in the Gaza. The court called the death an accident that occurred during, quote, a military activity meant to prevent terrorist activity, end quote. The judge, Oded Gershon, said, quote, she chose to put herself in danger. She could have easily distanced herself from the danger like any reasonable person would, end quote. Wow. At the time of her death, Rachel Corrie was a 23-year-old student who stood in a bright orange vest. You've seen them. You see them at every construction site you go by on the highway. She had a bullhorn, and she was standing between a bulldozer that was coming towards her and the home of a Palestinian family. This is in March of 2003, during the height of the Second Intifada. And since she was murdered by the bulldozer driver and consequently by the government of the State of Israel, since she was murdered, she has become an international symbol of the Palestinian resistance. A play based on her writings has been performed in 10 different countries, and a ship in an aid flotilla to Gaza bore her name. Books, documentaries have told the story. A lawyer representing the State of Israel said after the hearing today that the driver of the bulldozer did not see Ms. Corrie and could not have, which is astonishing. But governments lie. The United States government lies. The Russian government lies. The Israeli government lies. The government of the UK lies. Governments lie, especially when they are defending criminal acts committed by agents of that government. Look how the United States lied our country into a war that butchered and murdered a million Iraqis, caused another 2 million to be homeless, another 2 million to be refugees. Governments lie, especially when it is in their self-interest to do so. The State of Israel is lying when it says that the driver of the bulldozer did not see Rachel Corrie and could not have. In a news conference after the verdict, the Corey family's lawyer, Hussein Abu Hussein, showed pictures of Ms. Corey taken that day in 2003, pointing out that her bright vest could have been seen by anyone. And she was seen, and she was run over. And the bulldozer driver did it on instructions of his government, the State of Israel. Now, the lawyer representing the Corey family said they would appeal the decision within 45 days to the Israeli Supreme Court. Family members said they would continue speaking publicly about the case and what they say was Israel's failure to properly investigate it. Ms. Corey's mother, Cindy Corey, said at the news conference after the verdict, quote, "A civil lawsuit is not a substitute for a legal investigation, which we never had. The diplomatic process between the United States and Israel failed us." She added, "Rachel's killing could have and should have been avoided." And Bill Van Esveld of Human Rights Watch called the verdict, quote, "a missed opportunity," end quote, for the Israeli Defense Force to reform an investigative system that he characterized as deeply flawed. The failure, Mrs. Corey calls it a failure of the diplomatic process between the United States and Israel. I would disagree with that with respect to the Corey family. It was not a failure. It was a conspiracy. It was deliberate. The United States government, under George W. Bush, and subsequently under Barack Obama, and the Israeli government, at the time, I believe Likud was in 2003 was in charge of Israel. A different prime minister. I don't think it was Netanyahu at the time, but I don't think this verdict shows a failure of the diplomatic process between the U.S. and Israel. Israel could send the IDF into, pick a city, into Ramallah, with a contingent of armed soldiers and open fire indiscriminately. And the Israeli government would raise more hell about that than the government of the United States. The members of the U.S. Congress, including the House and the Senate, would probably immediately pass a resolution if such a horror were to occur, saying that obviously the IDF had been provoked into going into Ramallah and opening fire. This is the way it works with the U.S. Congress. The U.S. Congress would say nothing, nothing, no matter what the Israeli military, the IDF, or the Likud party did, nothing. What a shame. Bill Van Esveld of Human Rights Watch said, "The idea that there can be no fault for killing civilians in a combat operation contradicts Israel's international legal obligations to spare civilians from harm during armed conflict and to credibly investigate and punish violations by its force. Military investigators repeatedly failed to take statements from witnesses, to follow up with the witnesses' lawyers, and to re-interview witnesses to clarify discrepancies." But there's more on this. During the break here, please look up Rachel Corey. And if you feel like it, look up Ramallah, R-A-M-A-L-L-A-H. We'll be right back.
Show.
crowd, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking about Rachel Corrie verdict in a civil case that was handed down this morning by an Israeli judge in Haifa in the Gaza Strip. The verdict said that Israel bore no responsibility for the death of Rachel Corrie. And according to reports, this verdict came more than a year after the last of 15 sessions of oral testimony, which began March 2010. Who was it that said, "Justice delayed is justice denied"? Most of the witnesses, including the drivers and commanders of the two bulldozers that were destroying civilian homes that day, testified from behind a screen to protect their identities. Wow, really? Are you that cowardly? The mighty, mighty IDF and its commanders, you are that cowardly? Hell, even the United States military commanders that can destroy a city like Fallujah, they're not that cowardly. Shame on you, IDF. Shame on you, State of Israel. Shame on you. Shame on you. Ms. Corrie's parents and sister attended every session of the trial, spending about $200,000 of their own money on travel, translation services, and other expenses. Jesus Christ, they gave Eichmann more attention than they gave the Corrie family. Astonishing. They gave Demjanjuk. Remember him? The Ukrainian construction worker from Ohio who turned out to be Ivan the Terrible in one of the death camps? They gave him, the Israeli government did, more courtesy than they gave the Rachel Corrie family. Shame on you. Shame on you. Rachel Corrie's mother, or sister, who has met with more than 200 congressional offices in Washington about the case. Jesus, said she remained convinced that the driver of the bulldozer saw her younger sister. Rachel's sister, Sarah Corrie Simpson, said, quote, "I hope someday he, the bulldozer driver, will have the courage to sit down in front of me and tell me what he saw and what he feels." Ms. Simpson, don't count on it. And in an interview right before the verdict, Mr. Corrie's father, Craig Corrie, said, quote, "You don't really close a wound like this. But it certainly is a big milestone." End quote. At meetings across Israel over the past week, Mr. Corrie carried with him a picture, not of his daughter, but of the Palestinian girl who was 6 years old at the time, whose family's house Rachel Corrie died trying to protect. He said of the picture, quote, "I think this one in some ways is more helpful. She deserves a future, the little girl, that we all want for our children." End quote. And before the court session today, a small group of young people stood vigil outside the courtroom, holding signs with pictures of Palestinian families in their demolished houses. A woman walking by shouted at them, "It's the houses of terrorists they're destroying!" Prompting one of the protesters, Jewish Uri Gordon, to respond, "No, it's the houses of normal people, actually." Then Mr. Gordon added, "It's a defensive reaction. It's another indication of Israel society's refusal to face up to the crimes of its government." Uri Gordon is an Israeli Jew who's an activist for peace and reconciliation, which will never come as long as the U.S. Congress is comprised of AIPAC-managed cowards. We really, the United States is really, really an outlaw organization. I mean, it really does, an immoral, unethical organization. If there was anything that could be pointed to, that I could point to and say, well, this is a really gracious, no strings attached act by the government, I don't care by what party, of the United States, to really, truly promote understanding and justice. It made me so happy. Now, I'm not saying that those events don't occur somewhere, right? I guess somewhere in the vast bureaucracy of the U.S. government, whether it's under the command and control of whichever corporatist party happens to be in control, the Republicans or the Democrats, I'm sure there must be. Isn't there? Is there anything that is done on an international scale by the United States government that is righteous? Somebody will send me an email on that, I'd be happy to read it. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby the dark and night. Mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and what they do.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored, well, the whole night, by Norman Goldman. Thanks, Norman. His message, the Norman Goldman Show, supports real independent voices speaking truth. That's why this hour is sponsored by the Norman Goldman Show. Norm's book, Journey to Justice, details his own voyage to the truth. Visit normangoldman.com, where justice is served. Thanks, Norm. Good guy. Listen to his program. I've been telling you the past couple of last week and last night, rather lengthy, about plots by these Caucasian terrorists in the United States, which is the only kind that we produce, white, usually ex or current military, right-wing, Christian, murderous fools and freaks who decide they're going to assassinate government officials and overthrow the government and blow up military bases and attack bridges and dams. You never see anybody but Caucasians doing that, right? And they're usually, not always, but usually relatively young. We had a group down here in North Georgia that was snatched. Were a bunch of goddamn toothless hillbillies, but they were serious about what they were going to try to do. Now, the latest group last night I told you about, these soldiers from Fort Stewart in South Georgia. Well, now get this. This comes from a Canadian news service, a Canadian online news service, and I think it's maybe a newspaper, canoe.ca news. A conservative lawmaker in Tennessee has apologized for reportedly passing along a fringe Canadian media rumor that U.S. President Barack Obama is planning to fake an assassination attempt to keep the November election from happening. Kelly Kiesling, a Republican in the Tennessee State Legislature, forwarded the email from his official state legislature account this morning with the heading, forward, unbelievable election rumor. The rumor in question, which first appeared on CanadaFreePress.com, which is, I don't know, I have no idea, maybe Canadian listeners can tell us, but I think that's probably some extreme right-wing Canadian pro-Nazi website. Anyway, it states that Obama and the Department of Homeland Security are planning, quote, a series of events that may lead to martial law being imposed to delay the election. Jesus Christ. You see what's going on here, don't you? This is called cover. They get this rumor out. And then if a serious attempt is made, they can fall back to the fallback position. See, we told you! This is one of the oldest Republican neo-fascist right-wing tricks on the books. You declare something is going to happen by the person who's targeted. Did you know that Abe Snake is going to try to jump off the San Francisco Bay Bridge? He's going to do it tomorrow at 3 o'clock. This man's crazy. And then tomorrow at 3 o'clock, the people who want to get rid of Abe Snake take him up on the bridge and throw his body over. Well, the story's already out there that he was going to fake it. See how this works? Now, the original article appears to have been removed from Canada Free Press. The Constitution Party of Canada... uh-oh. The Constitution Party of Canada... Sieg Heil? Huh? You just get that feeling, don't you? When you see the word patriot or constitution, you know right away, I don't care what country it is, if it's in English, you know that you're dealing with a neo-fascist organization, right? Now, I don't know anything about the Constitution Party of Canada, but I will guarantee you, and I will come on this program and apologize if you send me something that says, well, here's proof, you're wrong. It's really a bunch of liberals. But you're not going to do that. The Constitution Party of Canada quotes this article from the Canada Free Press liberally on their website, noting that it has, quote, potential and, quote, is worth spreading. Now, the article alleges a Homeland Security whistleblower says the government is planning to stage a fake assassination attempt on Obama and blame it on, here's a surprise, white supremacists in order to cause mass riots. This probably came from Glenn Beck, come to think of it. This is something that Beck or Michelle Malkin or the rest of these right-wing turds would put out there. Of course, they would sneak it up into their allies in the Canadian press. Is this yours, Beck? Hey, you scum-sucking bastard, is this your little story, huh? The source that is put all this together said, quote, the whole purpose is to keep Obama in office for another term, no matter how unpopular he is, as he's not finished changing our country from a constitutional republic. God damn, that is Beck. That is Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. It is. According to the Nashville newspaper, The Tennessean, Kelly Kiesling, the Republican in the Tennessee legislature, released a statement apologizing for forwarding the email to constituents. Actually, this was last Tuesday. His statement reportedly reads, quote, earlier this week, I forwarded an email from my legislative office that should not have been sent out. The message was inappropriate for distribution. I regret the error and pledge to be more cautious regarding the information distributed from my office in the future. Now, let me go back to trying to legislate that women don't have any kind of control over their bodies and have to wear foot bindings from here on out. Excuse me. Bye. I've never seen anything like the assault on Barack Obama from white people in this country, from right-wing, crazy white people, rich white people, poor white people. The rich white people are sponsoring all this because they know they cannot defeat Obama based on facts or the truth or a righteous reason for defeating him, because they also know that the neo-fascists in this country have done everything to prevent Obama from performing his functions. I'm talking domestically here. You know my position on Barack Obama internationally. But his domestic functions have been totally stopped and thwarted by these neo-fascist pigs, these white people, in the U.S. House of Representatives and some of them in the U.S. Senate. We know this. This is a given. We understand. So that action is being engineered by the corporatists, by the capitalists who own the Republican Party, and who manipulate the religious nutcases within the Republican Party in order to make sure Obama doesn't have another 4 years. For what reason? I have no idea, except because they can. Obama has been as friendly to the capitalists as any president has ever been. He's gone out of his way to make it easier for the capitalists to destroy the oceans, to destroy the atmosphere, to destroy the land. Obama has gone out of his way to make sure that the capitalists who run the financial services industry, like Goldman Sachs, can continue to gut and destroy people's savings, their homes, their livelihoods, and their futures. Obama has gone out of his way to be the best little capitalist this country has ever seen. It has its roots, this anti-Obama thing, in two realities. Number one, the capitalists are doing it because it's fun, it's sport. And the idiots carrying out the policies of the capitalists are doing it because they are racist bastards. That's it. The teabaggers, the right-wingers, Mitch McConnell, Eric Cantor, all the rest of these people are racist thugs down to their very, the bottoms of the soles of their feet. So when a story comes up that can be spread by these right-wing vermin, well, he's going to fake an assassin. He's working with the Homeland Security. He's doing this so he can declare martial law. He's doing that so he can get a riot started. No, you asswipes. That is Glenn Beck. That is Michelle Malkin. That is Rush Limbaugh. And a whole list of right-wing pale-faced terrorists in this country. Oh, I know, Michelle Malkin, I understand. A whole herd of Caucasians who are doing this because Barack Obama is black. And what are we going to do? We're just going to watch this happen, I guess, right? I guess so. All right. We'll be right back. Sponsored by Norman Goldman. Thanks, Norm. His message, the Norman Goldman Show supports real independent voices speaking truth. That's why this hour is sponsored by the Norman Goldman Show. Norm's book, Journey to Justice, details his own voyage to the truth. Visit normangoldman.com, where justice is served. If you are not familiar with Norman's program, you should become so. Aside from the fact that he has generously sponsored the program tonight, he also is a nice man and has a good program. He's not as insane as I am. That's what makes him probably much more listenable. I don't think Norman screams and uses such rotten language which is to his credit. Thanks, Norm. Thank you for the evening tonight. Thank you very much. I didn't mention it last night, should have, about Neil Armstrong, first human to set foot on the moon, died Saturday. He was 82. Apparently, he died from as a result of the surgery that he had, heart bypass surgery, earlier this month in Cincinnati near where he lived, and his death was the result of complications, the family said, resulting from cardiovascular procedures. On July 20th, 1969, as the commander of Apollo 11, he did exactly what President John F. Kennedy had committed this nation to achieving, and that was the goal that before the decade is out, we would land a man on the moon and return him safely to Earth. And Neil Armstrong did it with more than 5 months to spare. Now, I say Neil Armstrong did it. Of course, Neil Armstrong was the commander of that flight and the first man on the moon, but this was a result of determination and cooperation on the part of so many elements of U.S. society that were still able to cooperate and work together back then. Now, granted, warmongering, yeah, blah, blah, okay, I get it. But this was something that was a pretty phenomenal move. It was one of those big things that used to be done. I've seen commercials or promos, I should say, for Rachel Maddow's program on MSNBC, and she talks about some of the big ideas that were conceived, formulated, and executed in this country back when this country made sense. And putting somebody on the moon was one of those ideas. Now, you may be kind of an anti-tech Luddite and respond to all this by saying, well, we don't have any business being up there. Well, that's certainly one point of view. But I agree with the idea that we should be expanding technologically. We should be reaching as deep into science as possible in order to offset this insane religious sickness that is just sweeping this country. I laughed when, during the Republican primary season, poor old washed out, overweight Newt Gingrich made his comment about establishing bases on the moon and going to Mars. Yeah, I laughed along with everybody else because we don't have the commitment or the dedication as a people, as a nation, to do that sort of thing anymore. And for Newt to suggest it was laughable. It was a joke because in the first place, the Republican Party would never fund it. They would never allow it to happen. They would say it's not in the Bible. You know, you can't go looking for other life forms around the solar system because it's not in the Bible. And there's nothing in the Bible about going to the moon. So, you know, what Gingrich said was kind of laughable. And he should have known better. But you know, Gingrich is a-religious. I mean, he's, I don't want to say he's an atheist, although I think he's pretty close to it. He just sucked up Catholicism because he wanted to marry his honey, Callista. And I think one of the requirements that Callista put out there was, first of all, he'd never, ever, ever touch her hair because it would all crack and shatter and fall to the ground, but that he become a good Catholic. And a good Catholic of the sort that Newt became, like the Timothy Dolan-style Catholic, first of all, he had to disavow his gay sister, and secondly, he had to swear to somebody that he would go strictly by the Bible. So the whole business of Newt Gingrich talking about landing a man on the moon was just a joke. It was just very, 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 very funny. But I digress. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon They landed their lunar landing craft Eagle in an area that was called the Sea of Tranquility. And what a lot of people didn't realize, and I'd forgotten, it was touch and go up to the last minute or two. There were computer alarms sounding. Do you know you have more computer power in your cell phone now than they had to get to the moon? Computer alarms were sounding. The fuel was running low, but they made it. And then Armstrong radioed Mission Control. He said, "Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed." Mission Control replied, "Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy."
This is a referral service.